Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Tuesday afternoon. Joining me from Naples, Florida, our front office insider, Bobby Marks. Hi, Bobby.
Gentlemen, how we doing? I figured it's 2 o'clock Eastern time, and every Tuesday that the guy in a lawnmower comes by that window just buzzing by. You know, luckily we're not jumping on TV in an hour and a half, but I feel like it's just customary that we've got the lawnmower going out there.
And that's first world problems, Bobby.
I know,
because it's not you.
I know
that's some random guy doing it for you.
It is.
That's Florida problems, Bobby, because no more grass cutting where I live for the long term foreseeable future. All the grass is done being cut for a long time. That voice you heard joining us from Oakland, California, is Anscape Mark J. Spears, our resident Hall of Famer. What's up, Spears?
Oh man, just trying to recover from all the smoky hotels in Las Vegas.
So yeah,
I might
man,
be a little nasally.
You know, you and I got to spend a little bit of time out in Vegas with John Halliburton, Tyrese's dad. The world knows John Halliburton now. They didn't know him a week ago.
Yeah.
One of the great characters, now he's on TNT. Now he's on, you know, I think he told me that they had him mic'd up. I don't know, it's going to be for an NBA thing later on during the championship game.
He had a story in Anscape.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, he's known now. I mean, but what a great character. And
nice guy, man. Just beautiful guy to be around. Great energy.
Yeah, you know, he's talked about how his dad is his biggest cheerleader and his mom can be his biggest critic. That's sort of the inverse of so many parents, right? Yeah, usually it's his dad who's the critic and mom who's the biggest cheerleader. But it was terrific. But he loves you, Spears. John loves you. So that was good to see. Now, I want to talk to start off this discussion about the opposite end of the spectrum for the teams that were in Vegas. So right now we have a league that, and this has been the case for the last few years, but is very bloated in the middle. There's something like 20 some teams that are either above 500 or within two games of 500. And, you know, 20 teams make the postseason. So you have this really giant middle class in the NBA. But you've got this absolute horrid bottom of the league that is absolutely getting just record-setting level of embarrassment at the bottom of the league, going through these miserable losing streaks, namely the Detroit Pistons, who lost their 20th consecutive game on Monday night. They are now 2-21. They actually started the season 2-1, which I didn't remember, but they are now 2-21 for the year, 20 straight losses. Monty Williams came out after the game, and I think he kind of ran out of stuff to say, but he said, I'm seeing some encouraging signs. I was like, you are? I mean, you know, you got to say what you got to say. And then in the West, you have the San Antonio Spurs, who lost on Monday night, and they have now lost 17 in a row. They are 3-19 on the season. And I don't want to, the losing streaks have the attention of everybody, and rightly so, but the Washington Wizards have lost 9 out of 10, and they are 3-19. They actually have the same record as the Spurs. They don't have that losing streak hanging over the top of them. They've only lost
45.
Yes. They've only lost 5 in a row. But Bobby, when you were in those 20 years with the Nets, I know you had some teams that reached the finals, but you had some bad teams in there. What was the longest losing streak that you had to contend with when you were with the Nets?
Well, it's funny. Every year when the schedule comes out, I look at the teams that are predicted to finish in the bottom, and I kind of can they break our record in 2009-10, which was 18 to start the season? And that record is still standing there. And I look at, you know, I look back on that time. Back then is different than what Detroit and San Antonio is going through a little bit too, because we made a coaching change. You know, during the Lawrence Frank was relieved right around Thanksgiving. Tom Barese came in for two games, and then the rarity is it wasn't promotion. I guess it's a demotion. Kiki Vandeweghe, who was the GM, went and became interim head coach. Different here with when you talk about Detroit and San Antonio, because I don't see Greg Popovich going anywhere in San Antonio, and certainly with Detroit with Monty Williams, who just signed that big contract.
These two coaches, Popovich and Monty Williams, have the two largest coaching contracts in the history of the NBA. Pop is reported by Woj 5 years, $80 million, And what was Monty's 5 years and 70?
I think
something?
13 per, somewhere around there in that neighborhood. Yeah.
So no, I don't think they're getting, it's not quite the same.
Yeah. I mean, and two, you know, Detroit, I mean, listen, I mean, we could talk, have a three-part miniseries on Detroit going back to, you know, post, you know, Chauncey Billups era, how they basically have been sitting in this bottom of the standings, you know, youngest roster in the NBA. San Antonio's has the sixth youngest roster right now. I'm going to get rid of the word tanking because I don't think, you know, we're 20 games in, not tanking. I'm going to say experimenting, right? These teams are kind
quite frankly, we had Jonathan Givony on last week.
This is not a tanking draft right now. I mean, you look at what both teams have, you know, with San Antonio, they've experimented. Jeremy Sohan at the point with Detroit, Monty's basically is, I think he's running out of options as far as how much he can kind of tinker with this roster. Asar Thompson starts, he comes off the bench. You get Bogdanovic back, which certainly they're more competitive of late. You know, Washington at the other end, who you guys mentioned, is probably going on in the extreme. They lose by 45 in Philadelphia. But you're right. I mean, when you're sitting in the bottom of the standings and you've got these those prolonged losing streaks, the worst thing to happen is you get a split locker room. You get a divide. As I said, I look back on 09-10 when Brian asked me to talk about this. I went back and on January 23rd, we were 3-40.
Oh.
On February 23rd, we were 5-52.
Wow.
So looking up at the standings, and what happens is it just creates that you're accustomed to losing. You're accustomed to losing. Our group back then is a lot different than Detroit and San Antonio because San Antonio's got 9 players 23 or younger. Detroit has 8 players 23 or younger. We didn't have, you know, we had Terrence Williams, Brooke Lopez. Poor Courtney Lee was in the finals the year before with Orlando, and we traded Vince Carter for him. And I don't think he ever got over in his career being with us in that 09-10 season. He basically had, PTSD here. And we had about 7 players that had 6 years of service or more, 6 veteran guys, which these teams don't. I would say for these teams, the goal is to go from where they started, at least from an individual standpoint, to where they are at the end of the year. And that should be a sign of achievement here. But you've got to keep this group together. Like, you can't have it splinter apart. And that's going to be the job of Pop and Monty Williams. And we'll see in Washington with Wes Unseld Jr., you know, who's got an interesting mix because you've got, you know, Michael Winger, who's their head of basketball operations, inherited a lot, but certainly added Jordan Poole and the Chris Paul trade. A lot of the former draft picks you're trying to weed out who fits Corey Kispert, Johnny Davis, who, you know, we rarely see. You're basically, this is kind of an audition for next year. Kuzma is the highest paid player. Tyus Jones is probably a nice piece for a team that wants to contend, who's on an expiring contract. But yeah, the losing streak takes its toll. The stories I can tell back 09-10 are, it's just, we had a guy that came in and it was a like a witch doctor, you know, and basically did a whole thing.
Wait a minute.
He was actually Jorge Posada's cousin.
Okay, I thought he was talking about.
He was a witch doctor, and he stuck a needle with no nothing through his side of his face. No, didn't numb it up or anything, and was basically show like it was a pain tolerance lesson here. I mean, we had Del Harris.
Wait, I'm gonna call timeout. I'm gonna have to call timeout. Timeout. The witch doctor came in to speak to the team.
He did. Yes.
Who set that up?
I don't know. I don't want to throw people under the bus.
You know
here,
that
but...
is our audience too young to remember the movie The Natural? Do you remember the movie The Natural?
I do.
Where they're on the losing streak and they bring in that guy and he goes, "Losing is a disease, as contagious." So like, wait a minute. Jorge Posada's cousin and was like, did an exorcism? Like, what was?
Yeah, he did it. You know, he basically did it. I remember we were in our video room in our old practice facility and basically pulled out a needle and stuck it through the side of his face here. To the point where I remember going back in that room and there was like bloody paper towels in like the trash can here. I'm thinking this is not safe. What just transpired here? That was during the losing streak. It didn't help because we wound up losing 18 in a row there.
No kidding.
But we had such a mix of young players and old players, and there became a divide. There was locker room issues. Certainly when you have a somebody who is your GM acting as a head coach. that is going to happen. I don't see that happening in Detroit or San Antonio. We'll see what happens with the Wizards here. It's just basically, as I said, Monty, Pop, young team. But man, you've just got to keep these guys, these kids together. I mean, it's all about kind of, you know, from a developmental phase.
Beers, you've been around. Tell me about losing streaks. You ever see have a witch doctor?
No. I covered the 2002-2003 Denver Nuggets. And their final record was extremely awful. They were 17-65. They're coached by Jeff Bozdelic. They had guys like Chris Birdman Anderson, Mark Blunt, Mark Bryant, Marcus Camby, a rookie Nicholas Skittisfeely, James Posey, Shimon Williams, Rodney White, Juwan Howard. And they had losing streaks of 8, 10, and 14. They finished the season with an 8-game losing streak. The team was so bad that they had a poll in some local paper or something like that about who was the most popular Nugget. And number one was Rocky the Mountain Lion, the mascot. Number two was Ryan Bowen, who was their, you know, do-it-all player who would dive into the stands and save anybody's life, who's now an assistant with the Nuggets. And I just remember just how miserable it was covering that team. I often would write about somebody else who was a star on another team or if they had a Colorado tie of some sort. And there was one, Juwan Howard used to crack me up, man. And I love Juwan. So, Juwan, don't be mad at me for saying this. Juwan's
got other problems right now.
Juwan never talked after they lost.
He didn't talk to him for weeks on end.
Oh, yeah. So we rarely talked to Juwan. But Chris Whitney, God bless him, man. Chris Whitney would talk after every game, as long as you needed him to talk. And one day I was like, man, Chris, like, you know, what makes you capable of doing all these interviews and talking about losing all the time? And I just remember him saying, hey, man, if I could talk when we can win, I could talk when we lose. And I always respected that from him. But that was the team that set up the Nuggets getting Carmelo Anthony, right? And, you know, but Denver was certainly upset getting the third pick when I think they were tied with Cleveland, right, for the worst record.
Yeah, classically, the Cavs fired
the coach.
It was
a year
before
you started covering the league, so, right?
That's right. I covered them I covered the Cavs a little bit during that season because the guy who covered the team went to cover the Olympics, and I covered him for a while. But the Cavs fired their coach during that year, fired John Lucas, and Keith Smart was the coach. But they won the last game of the regular season. The Cavs had a quote-unquote lead. They had one fewer win than the Nuggets, and I think the team was sort of annoyed by what had been made of them to tanking. And so they had to lose the last night of the regular season to assure the number one worst record, which was the difference between having a 20% chance. A 25% chance of winning the first pick and like a 17% chance. It was like some 5 or 6% chance difference between, and they ended up winning the last game of the season. So they lost for winning and tied with the Nuggets for the worst record. So they both had equal. I think it cost them like 3 or 4% split the difference, whatever it was with the percentages back then. So, yeah, but in college, Spears, you played college basketball and you had a losing streak in college, right? You sort of dealt with that.
I'm wearing a sweater today. Division II HBCU, the University of DC. I was almost like an NIL guy, but I got nothing. The N stand for nothing. I played at three different schools, but after playing, played at a junior college called Foothill in Los Altos, California. We went 23-4 and won our conference, went like three rounds in the state playoffs and lost. But then I get the scholarship at UDC, go to Washington, D.C. One of my teammates, and Bobby will like this, was Amadou Fall. Was the president of the Basketball Africa League now. And he like broke his wrist early in the season. We lost 7 players because of grades and injuries. So we went like 3-24, man. It was awful. We were playing with like 2 walk-ons. We had one guy that just had, they had a book scholarship only. And the coach was threatening him, like, if you don't do better, I'm going to take your book scholarship. He would threaten him all the time. And we were just getting our butt kicked night in, night out. And I just remember one game, man, finally had a chance to win. I was a horrible free throw shooter. I averaged like 65% from the field and 45% from the free throw line.
You're like Shaq.
Yeah. Well, not like Shaq, but in that regard, yes. And we were up one, and I had two shots. I missed both. Was so mad at myself for missing both that I fouled the guy who got the rebound. And then he had a one-on-one on the other end, and they ended up beating us. And I still remember the guy in the stands yelling, "Number 34, you blew the game. You blew the game, number 34. And we lost by like 2 points. And I went in the locker room, man, cried like a baby, man. I was so upset that we lost. I mean, it was a college level, not an NBA level, but just that losing, man, it just weighs on you, because at a point, you're just like, all right, I'm playing for my stats, right? I mean, if you know you're going to get your butt kicked, you're kind of like, I remember once I got scoring in double figures, I felt like I was, okay, I got, you know, what I needed for the game. That was really nothing to look forward to when you knew you were going to lose. It's a really weird situation, so you kind of end up just playing for yourself.
I definitely think that happens in the NBA. Absolutely thinks that happens in the NBA. You know, I remember, you know, the year after LeBron left the Cavs, they had, I think it was a record. I don't know. I think they lost 26 in a row the year after LeBron.
Yeah, I think that's the regular season record, not carrying over to, I think someone has maybe Philly has 28, but that carried, it went from one season to another.
Right.
But yeah, that 26 after, I remember looking that up, that it was after LeBron had left there.
So I had moved to Miami to work for ESPN, cover the Heat, but I had come back during the holidays back home. And so I went up to see the Cavs at a practice, and they had lost the night before. And this at the point they had like maybe lost 10 or 12 in a row. It was, you know, around the new year. And I remember it was like a Saturday morning. Winter had gripped Cleveland. It was snowy, frigid outside. They'd been blown off the floor the night before, like just arriving at midseason with no end in sight. And, you know, the Heat were taking off. LeBron was starting to dominate. And I came to the practice, and there was, forget about it for media there. There was like three media members there. It was like Saturday in early January, or maybe right after the new year. And I remember I went in to see the general manager at the time, Chris Grant. And he just said, come down to my office. There was no like, you know, I didn't have to like break off from the pack or whatever. And I remember I walked into his office and the lights were out and he was laying on his couch. He had a couch in his office and he was just laying on his couch in the dark, staring at the ceiling. And, you know, like that year they made this trade that got them Kyrie Irving and they drafted Tristan Thompson. Like they drafted two of the five starters who would end up winning the championship with them a few years later. And they had done the sign and trade for LeBron that basically later on would help them get Kevin Love. So like they were actually making progress, but it didn't feel that way. You know, I mean, grips of winter, middle of this long losing streak. And that's the thing. Like, so right now in the last couple of games, the Spurs have done something interesting. They have moved Victor Wembanyama to center. He's been playing power forward. They had him start at center the last couple of games. And he, in the first game at center, he had his first ever 20-20 game, 20 points, 20 rebounds. And on Monday night, they get beat by the Rockets in Houston. And look, it's a miserable game. They shoot 82, or they score 82 points. 82 points in 2023. I mean, like, that's preposterous. And I think they've also had an 84-point game this year. So they've had two games that scored under 85 points, which is one of the reasons why they're 3-19. But, you know, Wembanyama had 18 rebounds in this game. I think he had five blocks. And so, like, I know that there's a lot of this. Like, Tim Bontemps wrote a story maybe a week or 10 days ago about the Magic and how they went through a 5-20 slide last year. But some stuff that happened during that slide helped them pivot into the team that they are this year. We've heard Devin Booker talk about that one miserable year in Phoenix early in his career that framed, you know, and sort of inspired him to pivot his career. There's stuff happening in San Antonio, like Wembanyama going to play center. Like I can almost look into the future and see Spears writing a story in Anscape in, you know, that's dated like, you know, spring of 2025, where Spears is writing about this losing streak and how what's happening in this losing streak will influence Wembanyama. You know, the Pistons are in a weirder spot. There's interesting playing time happening between the guards, but obviously we've talked about Amen Thompson. I'm sorry, it's Asar Thompson who's in Asar Thompson who's in Detroit. But he's had some real moments this year. So like if you're a fan of the team, you're miserable. If you're on the team, you're miserable. And certainly like to think about what's going on with the Spurs and Pistons right now and put it up against like what's happening with the Pacers and like they're having this moment. It's hard to compare, but Spears, you've been around the NBA long enough to know that just because a team is losing, it doesn't mean there's not stuff happening. And so I'm not sitting here saying it's a sunny day, but ignoring what's going on. I mean, these guys are still got their sleeves up and they're still working at it.
Yeah. And I'm going to go back a little bit and interject a little bit and tell you a Chris Grant story. Can I tell you a Chris Grant story?
Sure.
I played against him in junior college.
Is that right?
We're in the same conference. So my team was the Foothill College. He went to Kenyatta. And his coach years later actually told me this story. I didn't know it. My team had a reputation for having gang members on it.
Okay.
And that if...
Are you denying that or was that an accurate reputation?
We had a reputation. We also had never lost a home game the whole season. And some of these people's friends were in the stands. So they were the first team to beat us at home. And the coach said he called a timeout late in the game. And he told the assistant coach to go outside, get the bus, drive it up to the back of the gym. And he told his players that as soon as they won the game, to just grab their stuff. I'm sorry. and run out the back and get in the bus and leave. And Chris Grant was on that team. Right.
All right.
So, man. But that's, you know, it's funny when I got back to the Bay in 2009, the Warriors were terrible like that, right? With Steph Curry. And I still remember Steven Jackson asking for a trade and just how miserable that whole team was. And that's why
it's absolutely true. They were a miserable team. They were.
And people that are from the Bay Area, longtime Warriors fans, like they still have PTSD from how bad they were for years and years and years and years. And Warriors fans would always be like, man, if they could just make it to the eight spot, like when getting to the eight spot was like winning the NBA championship. Like, you know, there was a lack of success when, and you know, they always used to celebrate Run TMC. Them dudes played together for 2 years.
Right.
You swear they played together for 10 years, but there was just the Warriors fans would go there to see the other team. There was always Lakers fans in the building, and that has since changed. And they forget that. But it was just a misery that just hung over that franchise for a long, long time. And I feel that with the Wizards now. Like I was talking to somebody the other day about, like, I don't know a franchise in a bigger market that has had less success in the NBA than the Washington Wizards, right? Like they haven't done anything really since the 70s. And we always talk about, well, if the Knicks are good, man, it's great for the league. When the Lakers are good, it's great for the league. What about if the Wizards were good, right? What if Washington was good? Like, it's the nation's capital. There's a lot of interesting, you know, historical stories there. And you just, like, they just been this, I guess there was a Pierce Beal, John Wall thing for a second. But
yeah, they reached the second round, I think, once or twice. Yeah, that was, like, you know.
That's like there's this feeling, like the same feeling I used to remember at Warriors games is the same feeling I feel at Wizards games now when I go. It's just like this desolate, sad, hopeless place, man. Like they can't, you know. Biggest news over the last 20 years is Gilbert Arenas bringing a gun into the locker room.
That's the thing. Like, Bobby, you remember those teams, those Arenas teams. I was right there. You know, they played the Cavs and LeBron in the playoffs three consecutive years. There was almost no more enjoyable player to watch in the league than Gilbert Arenas. And he had knee injuries, and then he had the incident, and that short-circuited that run. And then, you know, when they had Beal and Wall playing well, the injuries to John Wall short-circuited that as well. And, you know, I can remember going to the Wizards training camp one year at Virginia Commonwealth in Richmond, Virginia. And I sat and talked with John and Bradley, and they were talking about how they were going to beat the Cavs. They thought they were better than the Cavs. I remember when I got to Cleveland, like about a week later, LeBron giving me a side eye in the locker room and asking me about what they said. You know, they never got there. I think Wall got hurt that year. I mean, yeah, the Wizards, you know, it's awesome.
Are they that team in the NBA? Like, we don't talk about the Clippers how we used to. We don't talk about the Warriors how we used to, because they've had some success. But the Wizards are probably, and I mean, Bobby, like the Wizards.
Yeah,
are
I
the
mean,
most Detroit
is protected because of the stretch they had when they won the championship in 2004. They went to the final. You know, they had that, you know, Eastern Conference stretch. I think what 4 or 5 5 years in a row.
They went to the conference final 6 straight years, yeah. And they went to the finals twice, and once they won it, once they lost in game 7.
Yeah, so they're protected by that. I think certainly Orlando is protected, certainly going to the NBA Finals and losing to the Lakers.
Charlotte.
And then having a, yeah, I mean, the next team would be Charlotte, I would think, right? We can talk about them, but they're more competitive, I would say, this year. I think 7-14 under Steve Clifford. You get Bridges back, Hayward, Brandon Miller's played pretty well. LaMelo's been out for a while. But, you know, Indiana, you know, we talked about Indiana for a little while. You know, Indiana is interesting because it's, you know, we talk about, well, it was a rebuild. Well, they never really experienced the pain like some of these other organizations experience. And that's based on their own doing, where they got to the first round, you know, 7 or 8 years, just couldn't get out of it. Post Paul George retool with Bogdanovic, guys like that. And then they make the Halliburton trade and get Buddy Hield. Sabonis goes out. They move Brogdon that summer. They took a little bit of a step back, but
made the playoffs in the bubble.
Yeah. And they were an above 500 team last year, Brian, before Halliburton got hurt. Yeah. You know, that really went. Yeah. And then you see where they are, where they see right now. And like I always say, like that, if you want to retool, that's the blueprint. But how many teams can go out and swap an established all-star in Sabonis for one of the up-and-coming young players in Tyrese Haliburton? Those deals just are not out there for Detroit to go out and do. And maybe they will be. We got fortunate. I'll go real quick. We got fortunate in New Jersey in 02, 03 to make the Jason Kidd trade. Because Kidd had circumstances and, you know, listen, he was coming off a domestic battery with his wife, Jemana. He'd run his course in Phoenix. We made a trade for him that none of our owners wanted, that Lou Lamoriello, who's the president of the Islanders, now pushed through. And we were able to get Jason Kidd and then add the pieces around him. And that turned the organization around. And so that's when you're looking at Detroit and Washington, like, who's the one catalyst to come around these young players to kind of get them, you know, or maybe two players to get them over the edge. And you could be waiting around for a long time. I mean, you really can be, you know, San Antonio, they're in a kind of an island of them on their own, because they're using this year really as an experiment. They're loaded with draft assets, cap flexibility. Detroit's really not there. You know, Charlotte's not there. The kitty isn't full like Oklahoma City, where you're sitting on mounds of draft picks here. Those teams, both those teams owe picks. So the retooling, rebuilding part, you know, people say, you know, blow it up. Well, you blow it up, you'd be sitting in the bottom of the standings for a long, long time here if you just think you're going to just try to do this through the draft.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Yeah, I would say that when they made the decision to hire Michael Winger, it was basically an admission that they were going to do a major rebuild. And that was an understood thing when they traded Bradley Beal. And so, you know, they are in a long process, but they also have some talent on that roster. You know, you look at San Antonio, Wembanyama is averaging 20 points, 10 rebounds, and about three blocks a game. He's 19 years old. He turns 20 in about 3 weeks. Like, that is promising. And, you know, in 3 years, you might only have three guys left on that roster. They have all of their draft picks plus picks. Detroit has a number of young players. Washington's in a little bit of a different boat. They actually have an expensive roster, and they're out future draft picks. When they traded Beal, they weren't able to get a bevy of first round picks. So their path is a little bit rockier. But I think they're going to be one of the teams, Bobby, that we watch over this next 6 weeks as we build up towards trade season.
Yeah.
Teams can start to get to do trades. They can do trades now, but December 15th is when most of the players who signed last summer can start to be traded.
And Brian, you know who I got my eye on with the Spurs?
Yeah.
Who? Keldon Johnson. I keep hearing this buzz about, not sure if he fits in well with this group going forward, and should he be coming off the bench? And I mean, like, for a team like Golden State, if he's a player that they could pry away, that could give him, you know, that 16 to 20 points on any given night, I think that's a guy that they definitely should go after. But that if there is a player that I think does get moved from the Spurs, my guess it'll probably be Keldon Johnson.
Yeah, I think one of the things
I really like.
Yeah, well, he's on a very good contract too, Bobby, right? He signed a pretty good contract before last season.
Yeah, it's like four for 80, somewhere around there, $20 million number here. I mean, they've got a bunch of veterans, McDermott, Osman, you know, guys like that could help, you know, really good playoff teams. I mean, the same with the Wizards. I mentioned, you know, with, you know, Tyus Jones and Danilo Gallinari, Muscala, guys like that. You know, we're going to hear a lot about Kyle Kuzma, who can be traded starting January 15th because he has a little bit of a different trade restriction. But I mean, Kyle's contract descends. Those contracts are of huge value in this era when the cap likely will go up, and that number is will be $18 million in the last year of his deal.
Yeah, in the case of Kuzma, I mean, I'm not sure that they would admit to this right now, but the moment that they signed the Kuzma contract, I think it was signed to be able to be traded because, you know, they knew they wanted to keep him, but they didn't necessarily think that they were going to build the whole organization around him, but they knew he had value. So,
well, it's almost like the same thing, Brian, in Portland with Jeremy Grant.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we talked a lot about it when Damian asked to be traded on what was the 1st of July, and everybody's like, whoa, wait a minute. They just committed to Jeremy Grant like 12 hours before. Why would you commit? Now we can debate the number, right? The number is whatever, well, 5 for 1.
They gave him a 5 year.
165?
I'm not sure that was
somewhere around there. That's another talking point, but
you know, they may trade him, but it wasn't a contract that was designed to be traded.
That's another guy that, you know, he's out right now. I think he had a concussion, but he had been playing really well, you know, basketball there.
Well, so I mentioned earlier that there's this really big sort of middle class in the NBA. And so it makes it hard to identify which teams are going to be sellers. There's just usually not that many sellers. Like, for example, Toronto is on the bubble right now. They're like a bubble play-in team. And you can talk about Anunoby and Pascal Siakam, but you don't know what they're going to do. Chicago is a team that they were way down at the bottom, and now they've won 4 of their last 5. They did lose to Milwaukee on Monday night in overtime. But, you know, you question, like, are they going to sell Alex Caruso? Are they going to sell DeMar DeRozan? Zach LaVine's already on the market, but harder to trade. These teams we've been talking about, San Antonio, Washington, Portland, Detroit would seem like more sellers. So if you talk about, you know, Bojan Bogdanovic, whose contract was extended last year in a way that I think makes him attractive in trade, you talk about Spearhead Kelvin Johnson, you talk about Kyle Kuzma, Tyus Jones, Jeremy Grant. These are players who you could see actually be moved because their teams aren't going anywhere this year.
What was the last, Bobby might know this on the top of his head. Like, I still remember when Nene signed that big deal with Denver and then got traded to Washington, I think in December.
No, it was actually at the deadline. It was like the last trade. Okay. Like, the deadline came and they were like, okay, that's it for trades. And then like 20 minutes later, it was like, oh, Nene has been traded to Washington. Yeah. I remember that very well.
How often does that happen? Like, when was the last time that happened? That doesn't happen too often, right? Where a guy
we did it in New Jersey with Chris Humphreys. You know, Chris got like 1 year, like, you know, $14, $15 million. And the intention was that you could use it as a big trade chip. I think those,
dated Kim Kardashian.
Dated. They got married.
They got married. I went to the wedding.
Is that right? What was that? What was that situation?
Well, tell us that story.
My wife is, you know, was thrilled, right? You get the invitation. I said, I think something's coming in the mail, right? Here comes the invitation. It's in a big box. It's got all the instructions. You got to call the hotel. Here's the alias you got to use. This is where we're registered at. I said, don't buy anything. I think you're going to be divorced in 3 months. You know, you got that rule there.
You were right.
That was the year.
Well, was the hotel? What was the whole
procedure? Out in Santa Barbara. But you had to give, Princess Jasmine's, that was the name of the alias as far as who the wedding party was under. You had to, you met at a remote location. You couldn't bring your phone. You got, bused to the wedding. I sat next to Steve Garvey on the bus. It was tremendous. Yeah. Talking Dodger stories. The year before, we had tried to get Carmelo Anthony in a trade. And I showed up with a white tuxedo. Carmelo showed up with a white tuxedo. I said to him, you ruined my life for 6 months. Now you got to show up at the wedding with the same tuxedo. And but it was tremendous, you know, for people who, you know, like that People magazine type experience there to kind of go through that.
Well, okay, so wait a minute,
man. I need more details of this.
Well, another thing too is we were on strike during the lockout.
He just breezes past the witch doctor. He breezes past Princess Jasmine. Come on, Bobby. Let's hear it.
It was, you know, there was during the 2011 lockout too. We had to get permission to go the league,
because you're not allowed to talk to players.
No, we weren't allowed. The funny thing is, me and my wife got there a little bit late. They're radio in. They're basically, you know, seating you where your ticket is. Everyone from the Nets was basically in the grandstand section, right? we didn't have seats, and we basically wound up getting 50-yard line seats to this wedding where the two of us sat on a koi pond. It wasn't actually seats, but we were at center court, man. Like, you go back and watch those documentaries of the wedding. We're sitting there, and I'm there with my white tuxedo on and everything, but it was one of those once in a lifetime experiences. You know,
wait a minute. Did you buy a white tuxedo or did you rent the white tuxedo?
I rented one out in Santa Barbara.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
And what went into the decision to get an all white tuxedo?
Yeah.
You know what? I don't know. I just wanted to be different.
Oh my God.
So who was there? Who do you remember? Like, who was
Serena? Serena Williams was there. Okay. You know, certainly most of Brooke was there.
Obviously,
who else was there? Who cooked? Bobby Flay cooked.
Bobby Flay. Okay.
You know, it's you know, let's just say the Port-a-Johns were not your typical Port-a-Johns here. Like, there was the big, they rolled in the trailers. But it was a once in a lifetime. You know, it was one of those once in a you couldn't turn that down, right? The funny thing, flying home from California, I sat next to Stedman, Oprah's. I guess I don't know if it's her husband, but
Oprah
but he just sat next to me on the flight. And I got a double dose of the wedding scene celebrities. And then coming home, he got to sit next to me on the American
Stedman
flight.
Flies commercial, Spears.
Nah, Bobby must have been sitting in first.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, Stedman was flying commercial. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, that time, because Oprah wasn't there. That's why he had to go somewhere without her.
Wow. Oh, man. That's amazing.
Who was the best man and the best that made honor? Do you remember?
Well, I think his best man was his buddy Josh, who was an agent during the that Chris had here. I don't know who the maid up.
Courtney.
One of the sisters. Yeah, one of the sisters. but 4 months later, it was all she wrote. You know, that was it.
Yeah.
Married in the summer, divorced in October.
Wow. I'll bet that made for difficult. Okay, it was in the lockout. It was all happening in the lockout.
This was all in the lockout. Yep.
So you actually should have been fined for talking to Carmelo.
Yeah, I think that was over. The famous the meeting with Carmelo was hereby canceled. Yeah.
We were on to Dwight following year.
That's right. I remember that. Well, anyway, I do remember Blake Griffin signing the contract with the Clippers. And I remember he had scheduled a meeting with the Phoenix Suns. This whole podcast is going down memory lane. People have probably tuned out a long time ago.
They want to hear this more than
You remember he was like very publicized that he was going to meet with the Suns, and then the Clippers gave him a five year supermax contract, yeah. And they hired Michael Winger away from the Thunder like a month or so later, and Winger got there, and I think without talking outside of school, basically said, thank you for hiring me. Your decision to sign Blake Griffin this summer was terrible, and we got to get rid of him immediately. And they traded him, within a couple of months of that deal, Spears. So they didn't sign that deal with the intention of trading him, but like Winger, Lawrence Frank was running the organization, but I know that when Winger got in there, he was like, look, we got to move off of Blake Griffin. And it started the process that within, 18
Blake
or so.
Blake was real bitter about that too. Yeah.
Of course. They had told him, like, I think when they said, your number is going to be in the rafters here and everything. And, I certainly remember when he came back to his first Clippers game, Steve Ballmer waiting courtside to try to talk to him. And Blake just totally snubbing him. Now, I would say if a guy's worth, $75 billion or whatever he was then.
Yeah, you might listen to him.
You might want to just take the handshake. And by the way, that fifth year of the contract, which was a gift because Blake had the knee injuries, and then he ended up sort of doing a buyout and leaving a lot of it on the table, Bobby, to get out of Detroit so he could go play
most of that fifth year back. And then you always thought, hey, like, listen, he plays well in Brooklyn because the Nets had signed him, that he could earn some of it back the following year. And then I think he did another minimum deal and then goes to the Celtics here. And he's made a lot of money in his career, but
I'm not worried about Blake.
Yeah,
one of the things about that deal was he got the fifth year. That was why he sort of did the saber rattling that he was going to go sign with the Suns. And then the Suns, Robert Sarver was all upset because he got used, which the whole league could read it. But anyway, the point is, it's been seen before where guys have signed a long-term contract, had the lovely press conference, been all excited, and then traded, not too long afterwards, dumped like Chris Humphreys by Kim Kardashian.
Do you remember the t-shirt though? T-shirt that the Clippers employees wore to entice Blake to sign that 5-year, $173 million deal.
I don't.
They wore a t-shirt that had Blake Griffin on the top, surrounded by Muhammad Ali, Martin Luther King, JFK, Obama, Nelson Mandela, Einstein, Abraham Lincoln, and Gandhi. At the bottom of the t-shirt, it said pioneers.
Oh my God.
That they wore during the meeting. LA pioneers.
Oh my God. I do remember that.
I'm still confused.
Why was Gandhi an LA pioneer?
I mean, same with all of them, right?
Why was Obama an LA pioneer?
Lincoln. Einstein.
Yeah, Lincoln. I don't think Lincoln ever went to Los Angeles.
Yeah, really Mandela.
Certain. Well, Mandela might have gone to L.A., but that certainly wasn't where he was a pioneer.
Pioneers.
That's amazing. So who approved that? Who approved that?
I mean, did Ballmer on the team at the time? This is 2017.
Yes, absolutely, he did.
I got to ask him if he still has one of those T-shirts.
I'll bet he does. I wonder if Blake has one. Well, that's the thing. So the point is, the way you feel in July isn't the way you feel in December. And that's been the history of the NBA. But Bobby, you were telling us beforehand, I know you have a piece coming out this week about guys who can get traded, that while we pay attention to December 15th, because the whole league most of the league can get traded then. You don't see a lot of deals this time of year.
No, we haven't. We haven't seen, you know, certainly you look back in the last 2 years, there have been no trades in the month of December. 37 trades in total the last 2 years. 31 of those came the week of the trade deadline. You know, everybody reacts when there's a deadline. Certainly we saw, you know, last year, the Rui Hachimura trade mid-January was one of the, I guess, bigger ones. And that kind of set the wheels in motion for how the Lakers began to retool their roster. But, you know, Kyrie and KD and, you know, players like that were all moved during the week. And, we've got the G League showcase coming up in Orlando next week, the week of the 19th. And that's kind of like the winter meetings for, you know, the NBA. If you're looking at it from a baseball comparison, where you've got a lot of executives in one building, some of the chatter starts to get going here as far as who could become available and who's, you know, I mean, we're still 25 games into it. So teams are still trying to figure out who they are. As you said, Brian, there's a lot of these teams that are like 12 and 10 or 12 and 11 and teams kind of jumbled up in the, in the standings here. But it will be interesting because, you know, we saw some of the big names, Harden and Holiday and Lillard, traded to high spending teams. And this is really the last deadline before the new rules, the harsh rules, begin to take place, starting next offseason. We'll see who kind of takes advantage of that.
Yeah, I mean, I've just been looking at, you know, what teams, you know, could, you know, make significant moves. There's quite a few teams that literally have nothing to trade. Like the Timberwolves, they're although they did get beat by the Pelicans on Monday night.
Even Milwaukee, Brian. I mean, yeah, Milwaukee. You know, I hear like people are saying, "Well, Alex Caruso would be great in all 29, 29 or 30 teams here." But right. What do you got?
Milwaukee has the Blazers' second round pick this year. Like literally, that's all they have to trade.
Yeah, you want to trade Pat Connaughton or Bobby Portis or one of those players? Yeah. You know, that's the way you have to look at it. You know, I think.
The Timberwolves literally have nothing to trade. The Cavs, they can trade the contract of Ricky Rubio.
Yeah.
No, they just, you know, the Suns have traded every first round pick. They have a couple of second round picks that are not there, but they've traded all of their second round picks, all the swaps. They can trade just a couple of minimum guys. And then there's the teams that have a lot to trade. Philly, I think, can trade up to four first-round picks if they had to, and they have tens of millions on their books and expiring contracts. The Thunder have all those first-round picks they can trade. Knicks have, I think, they have seven tradable first-round picks. Fournier's expiring contract. Even the Heat have multiple first round trip picks and Kyle Lowry. So there are teams out there that are flush to trade, but there's quite a few contenders that are really, there's not much that they can do. The Warriors.
What do you think about Chris Paul's contract?
Well, that's a big question. You know, first off, right now, the Warriors are outside the in-season turn or the ins outside the play-in tournament line.
Yeah.
They're below 500. And so the question is, you know, would they be willing to use Chris Paul's contract as a expiring contract? Like, would they be willing to take on money with, you know, being hugely committed to the future? I don't know the answer to that. I think it would depend on the trade. My guess is probably not, because you'd have to look at yourself in the mirror and think that this team was worth going into that. And I don't know if they can come to that conclusion, Bobby, but that's a team that, you know, they have Kuminga, they have Moses Moody, they have expiring contracts. Like, they could get into the game for a major trade because of all that. I just don't know if they will. And there's a bunch of teams sort of sitting in that middle ground. I would say that I'm not optimistic about there being a very super active trade deadline, Bobby.
No, I think you're right. I mean, you know, Oklahoma City, everyone will point to as far as where they are in the standings. But the one, you know, when I'm starting writing, you know, trade deadline and questions, is like, I always say, is the locker room mature enough to handle somebody from the outside, right? That roster is built within, you know, the Gilgeous-Alexander was traded here, but the primarily that roster is built through the draft. They don't normally go out and add, you know, they did the Paul George trade, but high level guys outside of their own family. Bertans is a role player here, and that's not kind of their MO as far as how they've kind of gone out and done business. Like, I mean, you know, you're interested in teams like Houston, right? Where is Houston kind of sitting at 500 in the play in Oladipo's contract? They've got some draft capital. Is Orlando ready to kind of take another step, or are they content where they are right now? I think 16 and 17, they've got some expirings. They've got some draft picks to go out and trade. They've got some caps. But Indiana, we've talked about in the beginning, Indiana is a great example here. They've got $10 million in cap space. They've got draft equity. They've got a bunch of expiring contracts. You know, we all talk about, you know, the, you know, cap space and free agency, but it's not a great group of free agents this offseason here. Siakam's probably one of the top. OG's one of the top guys here. DeRozan, you know, we don't put LeBron in that equation. Tobias Harris. So, you know, Drew Holiday might sign an extension. He could come off
the
board.
What do you do with Miles Bridges?
Yeah, Miles Bridges is another thing. You know, Miles Bridges is on an expiring contract in Charlotte, 1-year deal. He doesn't have much trade value because his bird rights gets eliminated if he gets traded to another team.
Also, he's got pending legal issues.
Yeah, so there's a lot of kind of, there's a lot of things up in the air. So I think it's, when you're looking at the trade market, you're looking at those kind of those, those in-between teams, those kind of, you know, those Houstons of the world, maybe Indiana, you know, we'll see what happens. Detroit, those type of teams, but there's 442 players under contract. You know, it's not like we're sitting on like 3,000 players and we can just start moving, you know, pieces around.
Well, I would say that, you know, in the sort of the final analysis of where we're at right now, it's very scattershot. We can't tell what teams are going to be sellers. We can identify the possible buyers, but we're having a hard time right now seeing how the buyers and sellers mix. We're not really sure, you know, whether certain teams are going to be willing to spend more. We're not sure whether certain teams are going to be looking to cut salary. Chasing picks in this draft is not, you know, if you have, you know, I think like the Knicks could have, they won't, but the Knicks could have up to 4 firsts in this draft. I think they're going to end up with 2, but people don't want picks in this draft.
Yeah.
They're not excited about this draft. So
outside of the top, 2, 5, maybe
Gavoni was like, I think he said, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I'm pretty sure he said most of the top 5 right now are role player projections in the NBA. I mean,
well,
we're not
I'm
June.
I'm going to say this. Ron Holland, I saw him play the other day at like 32, 18-year-old. Gee, he's a good player. He's a real good player.
Well, he got off to a rough start with the Ignite and fell really far in Gavoni's latest mock draft.
And that kid in the French kid playing in Australia, I don't know why.
Oh, Sar.
Yeah.
I think will initially be a role player just because he's raw, but this is a 7-1 player with bounce, can shoot threes, can guard all 5 positions. I think he actually has a chance to be pretty special.
Yeah, but there's nobody right now.
But there's no depth. No.
There's nobody right now like thinking, okay, we're on the fence, so let's tank to get into high lottery.
No,
you know,
right.
So that's
you're right.
So it's just a very scattershot trade market. And obviously we'll talk a lot about it and it'll develop, but it's not something right now where I'm like, okay, everybody clear your schedules the first week of February. We're going to bear down.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. and you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Before we go, Spears, I know you were interested in talking about Zion. Zion had one of the most disappointing games of his career.
The most
on Thursday in the in-season tournament semifinals against the Lakers, and then comes back on Monday night in his first game back and has arguably his best game of the season, scored a season-high 36. They get the Pelicans look completely different. And they get a win over the Timberwolves. They were at home, but the Timberwolves were 17-4. That was an impressive win. And I want to read what Zion said after the game, because, you know, Zion is obviously a high profile player, and how he plays is frequently discussed. And he was a little bit discussed in the offseason when there was a possibility that the Pelicans kind of denied it, but he was briefly thought about as a possible trade. But he got heavily criticized by people after that performance on Thursday, and so here's what he said after his 36 point performance on Monday night. He said, "If the criticism comes from a great place and a place where you just want to see me do better, thank you. But if it comes from anywhere else, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, and you can't control that. It's been like that since I was 16 years old. If I want to be one of the best players in the league, we don't win in a big moment or something bad happens, that's to be expected. I'm just glad we responded." That's what he said.
Well, I think from my place, and I assume yours, I think I'm expecting greatness from him, And I go to a lot of games in New Orleans. I got family there. So I think the whole city of New Orleans has been waiting for special since his arrival. And I saw the win the Kings gave up to the Pelicans in SAC. And Zion didn't have a great game, but the Pelicans got him to that Final Four. And I think I was rooting for him to have that moment. You know what I mean? That moment we've been waiting for on such a huge stage, playing against LeBron, what it would have meant to the franchise. And it's one thing to lose, but to lose like that and to say, man, I could have given more effort. I think that was probably could have been as crushing a loss to the Pelicans as they've had since he's arrived. I mean, sure, games he's gotten injured have been, but there was just there was so much hope and then so much embarrassment from that loss. So I think by that quote, he kind of understands that there's a lot of people that are expecting great things from him, and that could have been a really shining moment that didn't take place. Well,
I do have a rooting interest when it comes to the NBA, and that is what's good for the league.
Yeah.
Individual teams, I don't really care so much about, but I want the league to do well, because if the league does well, those of us who are tied to the league do well. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's just the truth. I want Zion Williamson and Ja Morant to be successful because they are young, yeah, American potential superstar players that can carry the league. They are guys who you want to see play. They can do things that are amazing. And, they're also both from the same area. They're both from South Carolina. They're connected. And so both of them have shown incredible promise, and both of them are, for various reasons, not getting it done. Ja is going to be back in a week, Bobby. The Grizzlies, as of just doing this podcast, they're 10 games under 500. They're six games out of the last play-in spot in the West, and they're 1-10 at home. And that is, by the way, after having gotten a few wins recently. They picked up a couple of wins right before the in-season tournament break. But they've dug themselves a pretty big hole. It's not all related to Ja. They've had other injuries. But, right now New Orleans is in 10th and Memphis is in, 13th, but pretty far back. Like, that's not what the NBA needs. The NBA needs those guys to be playing each other on Christmas. not, you know, being considered big disappointments / embarrassments.
No, you're right. I mean, I think, you know, Memphis is going to be, you know, just interesting to how much can they dig themselves out? I mean, they were in a hole to begin with the Steven Adams injury. Then you have, you know, certainly Ja suspension. They've had, you know, one of the teams that have signed guys through these hardship exceptions because their roster, Luke Kennard. I mean, the injuries, you've got Derrick Rose starting at point guard. You've fortunately, and Brandon Clark still out. Fortunately, you know, you've gotten really good games, you know, level of games from Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. Saw that in the Dallas loss on Monday night. Both guys scored, I think, 70 points combined. But it's like, where else, what else is coming? You're hoping.
You ever seen a hardship exception in November? I think it was in November, maybe the first couple COVID. Days of December.
COVID, when we had all
okay,
those COVID,
yeah, those all COVID right.
Hard, yeah. All those guys got a job for a couple weeks here, but no, not that early. And you know, certainly, you know, Memphis is going to be a team you circle. Certainly, even this week here, because they're going to have to make a decision with Bismack Biyombo or another roster spot to keep him, who's played, he started for them. Here, but Memphis is going there. They are in a tough spot just because of how that Western Conference is. It's very deep. As you said, you got Golden State sitting at 11 right now. Houston's in the top 10. Teams that didn't make the playoffs last year are now in that grouping here. They're going to basically have to go string along, you know, 7 or 8 in a row just to kind of, you know, get back in it.
Since we've gone down memory lane so much, do you remember those weeks in that season where these teams would have to like shut down because of COVID and stuff? And like, if you were like a fringe NBA player and you had COVID, it was like a plus.
I remember
the agents were like, hey, my guys had COVID. All right. Sign him and bring him in.
I mean, I'm sitting at my desk and it's like I'm having like deja vu flashbacks. I remember getting calls from agents who were G League agents of G League players saying to me, Bobby, I got 4 choices to make. Run through them for me. I got these 4 teams are basically bidding on my guy to get there on a 10-day hardship, yeah. 10-day. And, you know, created an extra 100 jobs. I mean, it was a crazy period. And those guys, we go back, maybe we do a documentary on it like 5 years from now. Those guys kind of kept the league afloat for like 2 or 3 weeks when it was such, and it was right around this time of year during the G League showcase out in Vegas, because I remember, I think Mark was out there too in 2000, was it 21? Yeah, 21, I think, where remember guys were just leaving. Right. Like there were no, like teams were just, you know, there were teams that would go out there. You'd see guys in the airport flying home. They had just got there. No, we need you in Chicago. There's 4 there. One team, Grand Rapids, had 8 guys, you know, because guys were just scattered about because so many NBA players had caught COVID that they needed basically reinforcements. And the G League kept the NBA kind of going for that. They didn't have that shutdown moment where the whole league shut down for 2 or 3, because we all talked about, man, the league's got to shut down. We need like a 2 or 3 week pause.
Didn't that
here,
kind of make Juan Toscano Anderson's career too?
What's that?
Like Juan Toscano Anderson, I think, kind of benefited from that.
Oh, there were a lot of guys. I mean, there were a lot of guys that just kind of got that exposure that they wouldn't have gotten under any other year.
That's a good story idea, man. I don't know.
Yeah, there's your documentary. How the G League kept them, how the G League kept the NBA alive in the 21-22 season.
That's great.
All right. Well, we'll be interesting to see when Ja comes back next week, and we'll see if Zion can keep it up. But thanks for going down memory lane, guys.
Yeah, Bobby, that was fun. And Mark. What was the alias again, Bobby?
Princess Jasmine. listen, we can do one of these. We can do a 24-hour on these stories Jasmine here. There's a lot in the kitty here. You know, we got a lot of these things.
I want to hear more about the witch doctor. I wonder if Miguel Jackson said, I wonder if Miguel Cabrera has a cousin who can come in and save the Pistons.
Wow. Well, it didn't help. 12-70.
Oh boy. All right. Thanks for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you to Mark. Thank you to Bobby. Thank you to Jackson. We'll talk to you later in the week.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/hoop, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/hoop now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/hoop.